My name is Brian Howard. I am the editor-in-chief of Book Business Magazine. I hope you're enjoying today's show and that you're coming away with lots of great ideas. It is my pleasure to welcome you to eBooks, an analytics goldmine. Before we get started, I'm going to run through some quick tech tips on how to make the most of today's live webinar. First, if you have any technical difficulties, you can troubleshoot by clicking on the Help widget at the bottom of the console. It's the one marked with a question mark, or let us know via the Q&A box. You can also use that box to submit your questions to today's panel, and we'll be addressing select questions at the end of the hour, and send them in at any time. Please make sure you turn off any pop-up blockers on your computer so you can utilize all the widgets on the console. To figure out what all the widgets do, click on the Tips for Attendees widget to learn how you can customize your experience today, and you can even tweet right from the console. And lastly, if you leave this session at any time or would like to view it again later, you can access the entire presentation from the auditorium in the Publishing Business Virtual on-demand environment, which will be open for 3 months beginning on Monday, September 17th. Now, let's get to our session. Let me introduce our speakers. Today we have Galia Bhatti. Galia is General Manager eBooks for Scholastic Book Clubs and e-commerce, a division of global children's publishing, education, and media company Scholastic. Joining Galia is Matthew Kavnar. Matthew is the VP of Business Development for Book, a cloud-based e-publishing platform. And our moderator today is Andrew Brenneman. Andrew is the founder of Finitiv and the author of Book Business's wildly popular Digital Directions column. Today's session will feature short presentations from each of our panelists and conclude with a healthy portion of questions and answers from our panelists and from you, the audience. And without further ado, let me turn the floor over to Andrew.
Thank you very much, Brian. I'm very excited about our panel today. I think analytics is an extremely hot topic in publishing and digital publishing. To frame the conversation, analytics is, broadly speaking, the practice of collecting data and trying to extract insight from that data about our customers and about our products. As publishing gets increasingly digital and as content is delivered in the context of digital applications, we have the opportunity to gain that insight from the usage data that we collect from that. Just to frame the conversation today, Matthew will give us an overview of the practice of data collection and analysis. He will then walk us through some ways that Book has innovated data collection and analysis. We'll then turn to Galia, who will talk about a very exciting program initiative that Scholastic is pursuing using their Storia platform for data collection and analytics. I'll then speak a little bit about how the emergence of cloud platforms plays a role in the world of analytics, and then we'll get into discussing some challenges and opening it up to some of your questions. So let me start with Matthew, who will sort of help us frame the conversation. Matthew.
Hi. Thanks so much for the introduction, and greetings to all of you. Thanks for attending this conference. Good to be presenting to you. So just before we get off to a start, I think what's so interesting about analytics today is how those numbers, those metrics, are deeply tied into the very form of the book content, the digital book or the digital media content. The analytics themselves are sort of wrapped up in how people even experience or get your content. So I break it out into three buckets, and I just like to make sure we're all on the same page so we kind of understand what's possible in analytics today, what you can innovate with other companies that are doing some interesting things in analytics, and what you could potentially build yourself if you wanted to go a much more robust path. So before we can talk about what's possible in analytics today, I just quickly differentiate between what I see as the three key ways people experience book-like content today. There's digital books, EPUB and Amazon files, as we all know them. So there's the digital books that's sold through the major retailers and up-and-comers like Sony and Kobo, though they're almost established at this point. Then there is app content, which is primarily, in our experience at Book, through the iOS platforms. So you've got ebooks, you've got apps, and then there's this third category that's more emerging, the HTML5, web-based reading experience, which is people reading online through a web experience that reformats for whatever device you access the website through. So if you're reading on an iPhone, it's like you're reading a book over the web. So those three formats. And what's so interesting about the analytics is that when you come to the first ebooks as sold through Amazon, BN, and iBooks, it's how little you can actually get. You know, those retailers will give you sales information, but all of that customer information, you know, who purchased your book, when they purchased it, any of that info, that those metrics, they keep that. And I remember Seth Godin once said to me, and we shouldn't quote him directly, but he said to me, you know, Matt, the publishers should have given up all of the money they made in the last 10 years from Amazon in exchange for all of the customer information, because that's really the value in the future. So when you look at, you know, what you can get today, really you get sales information and ranking information from an Amazon or an iBooks or a BN. And there's a lot of things you can do with that, but you just have to be aware that you can't get all the things you think you can get. So in those markets, to take advantage of what you can get, you need to do things like build into your content ways to capture important pieces of info. We just released a book called 11 Days in May that has this in-book discussion feature. So people can click on links, and it pulls up a website that allows them to chat with the author and other readers. And to do that, we also capture their email information. So that's a way you can use in-book linking to capture what your readers are doing when they are interacting with your content, because you're not going to learn anything about them otherwise from the big channels. Well, then you go over to apps, and I'll make this quick. You go over to apps. Apps are actually, they allow you much richer analytics. You can actually track people's involvement with and engagement with your content in their app. Companies like Flurry, for example, allow you to, they can tell you how long people are spending your book, how far they're getting into it, how much of a multimedia experience they're taking part in, what links they click. This incredible granularity, that you can pick that up from your apps. On the other hand, that really is only going to help you improve your product, because you'll see where it's falling off and where people have less interest. But if you do in-app merchandising opportunities, or if you're selling additional content through the app, you can learn where that e-commerce piece is falling off. And just as you optimize an e-commerce website, you can follow the activity in your book-like app, see where it's falling off, and optimize for purchase. Because, of course, what's the point of all these analytics if they're not giving you anything directional? And then finally, it's the web-based experience that's beginning to pop up more and more, become more and more popular. Amazon, Kobo, for example, have their HTML5 readers. You can go to read.amazon.com, read.kobo.com on any device and read there. If you can develop one of these platforms, or you can work with another party, a vendor, such as Bluefire, for example, you could come up with a reader that would allow you to sell content directly to your audience. That way you could capture the audience, the customer information, and you could capture what people are doing in your book to an incredibly granular level, because you're basically repurposing the book as a website. Once a book becomes a website, that richness of such things as Google Analytics becomes more applicable to you and allows you to get much deeper analytics. So just to sum up, in the ebook marketplaces, you really don't have access to much but your sales and rankings, and we can talk about interesting ways to take advantage of that. In your app marketplace, you can use things like Flurry to learn a lot about how people are going through your book and improve the product experience to ultimately drive better conversions. And finally, in the HTML5 environment, if you can develop that or hook up with somebody who has that existing solution, you can get incredibly granular information and customer information. It's kind of the holy grail of what you'd want to achieve.
That's great. And yep. Matthew, I've put up the list of resources, and I apologize to the audience for the size of the type, but these are the references that Matthew referred to. If you could you go down that list and just make sure that people understand the spelling of these various resources?
Yeah, absolutely. So let me walk you through. These are companies, some of you may be familiar with them, some not. But they're companies that I know the people behind it, or we've worked with them, or we have very good reports on them from other partners of ours. For example, there's Booklr, and this is really for that first category of places that sell ebooks, Amazon BN and iBooks. Booklr is a startup in NYC, and what they've done is they've dived really deeply into sales data on an incredibly granular level within genres and within categories, and they have learned by collecting so much information that's publicly available on tracking on trends, they can give you directional information about your metadata. So what that means is they can tell you, hey, maybe this book that you think is going to sell really well in art biography is actually meant to go over into entertainment biography, or maybe some totally unrelated category like golf. They can look at those. They have a large well of data, and they can put that to your use to help you optimize metadata in those marketplaces to drive better conversions. Hiptite's a brand new startup that's come out of Y Combinator in California. They're promising to become the Google Analytics of ebooks. It's certainly worth looking into. Booklr, for example, might not have as great dashboards in their reporting, but Hiptite offers you these really interesting dashboards to visualize your information, which I should mention is just so key because you have to show something directional to the entire organization from the executive level down, and you need to present that data in a compelling and beautiful fashion. And that's where this other company, Metrically. Metrically is a general purpose analytics tool, but we partnered with them to build some very robust dashboards that we can extend to every author who's published with us, and it shows their sales tracking in every marketplace daily. While doing that, it also shows the price point that they set for their book every day, so they can look at trends and adjust over time. So they can do price testing, see how they match their price to the optimal sales point to get the best possible price point. And Metrically is out there on the web. I mean, you can go to them right now and plug into it. They also track Twitter activity for a Twitter account related to a book, a Facebook account related to a book, the Google Analytics for a book's web page. The more time you put in with a tool like Metrically, the more powerful information you'll get back. Flurry is the company I mentioned that you can integrate. It's almost a must-have if you're creating any kind of app. You need something like Flurry because they're going to tell you how people are actually, in a daily report, how people actually interact with your content. Then there's StoryCode. They're out of the Pacific Northwest. They combine both making really beautiful content for you in an app-like or ebook or iBooks author experience with a robust analytics backend for anything they deliver through the iOS store or the Android store. Anything they deliver, they can build. They can give you custom analytics as you might need it, based on both how people interact with your content and if you're putting in ads or upsells or anything else, they can provide you a lot of rich information around that. And finally, I put in Localytics as just a balance out to Flurry. They're another company that does similar work to Flurry and is worth checking out.
Thank you very much, Matthew. That was excellent. And the list of resources Matthew has compiled for us is invaluable, and a review of these resources would give you a very good background in analytics. I'd now like to turn to Galia to talk about some of the pioneering work that Scholastic is doing in analytics, particularly as related to their Storia platform. Galia.
Hi, everyone. Thanks for attending. I want to talk a little bit about the ebooks and the amount of data that may be available to us, and it obviously depends on who we are and where we sit. Meaning if we actually have our ebooks as content pushed through key players like Amazon, Scholastic, Nook, Book, information available to you versus if you're selling your book as an app or as a book as an app or have an app of your own, the range of data you have is different. So we're going to explore those two areas a little bit today. But I'm going to start by talking about Storia, which is a free interactive e-reading app designed for kids that Scholastic has launched this week. There are thousands of books available through Storia in the school market and through our websites. And this app is available on the PC, Android, and iPad, and other additional platforms we are releasing this fall. the app is a server side and a cloud-based solution. So any book that you're purchasing, we can easily push it to wherever you are. The key part is that the app allows parents and teachers to create multiple bookshelves for their children and for their classroom, and they're able to gauge reading activity through parent tools and features that are built in the application. Stuff like the books that are on the child's bookshelf, the pages they're turning, the words they're looking up in the dictionary. And for Storia, we're actually capturing this in-depth information and running analytics on it. And there are three big areas to understand the customer and in this digital era. The first being what we are capturing within the Storia application itself. Obviously, I want to state because we do work with kids and schools, everything we capture and dish out is the COPPA compliant. So the key things that we are capturing through the application are time spent on a book, different titles that are being read by kids, pages that are turned, words that they're looking up in the dictionary, different types of platforms that customers are reading and engaging with this content, number of bookshelves that parents and teachers are creating. And we have this information by the titles, by our publishers, and a huge amount of information that we are capturing through the server side. Another interesting point is empowering children like we've always had and giving them the capability through this application by linking some of them built within the books, like a wish list capability. So when the kids are done reading a book, at the end of the book, just a title, and they can also rate the books where and these features and related data is then captured on the server side. We also import data from our App Store and the Google Play to get information around downloads. Obviously, there is no clear information on who the customer is, but it's a good point to have to triangulate our information for analytics. The third piece of data that we are gathering to understand the digital customer behavior is their browsing and shopping experience and behavior on the websites, on the Storia store on scholastic.com. Capturing is is then housed in a data warehouse. We actually at Scholastic have a homegrown Oracle-based solution and a data warehouse where we run canned reports and ad hoc reports to drive the insights from this data through running different SQL queries. Capturing this information, but we're also analyzing and presenting it back to obviously our customers so they can make the right next purchase of ebook. But we also have a lot of huge insights that we are open and capable of sharing with our publisher partners. Some of the interesting things we're seeing already are the bestsellers that are for Storia in the school market from kids and children are very different from what bestsellers you would see in general on competitive sites or competitive top lists. It's because the teacher and the parents and the children are driving that behavior and those titles to kind of surface up. We are also seeing a huge amount of interest in books that we are offering through Storia, which are enriched. So kids think it's a great fun, and parents and teachers are actually looking at them from a comprehension perspective, from the fact that these enrichments and interactions actually create confident readers. And we are able to sell these at a much higher price point compared to standard ebooks. So these and similar types of insights we have that we can we are sharing with our publisher partners. And the last thing I want to add is we are looking into Insighten tags, which is a company which can build apps into tags into your application to gauge activity that happens within the application for both when the customer's online and when the customer's in an offline mode. And data like you sign into the app, you're playing around with the free content that you have, you're clicking and setting up bookshelf, you're registering on that device, all of that information plus other tags or links that may be embedded within the application or the ebook content are captured. And when you sign in and you are online, that information is shared. So in our case, we are capturing that on our server side, but I know that Insighten also has its own server side where the information can be captured and can be shared.
Could you spell that, Kalia?
Ensighten.
And
great. Titan.
Wonderful. Okay, that was a lot. Thank you so much. I think that if we can sort of pull together some of the great insights and observations we've gotten from Matt and Kalia, we have two different kinds of data we can collect depending upon the modality of delivery. One, in the case of ebook sales, like print sales, it's tracking transactions and discrete moments in time, whereas when you have a cloud-based platform like Storia, we have the ability to do real-time behavioral tracking. And I'd like to expand on that a little bit on the cloud side to sort of discuss some of the ways that we can dynamically collect data. Finitiv as a cloud-based platform for publishers to do some of the things, although certainly not all, that the Storia platform does. Content is loaded into the cloud and at that point is made available to client applications that the publisher develops for either mobile or web platforms. The content is delivered through standard applications, web services, APIs, and is delivered within the context of a mobile app or a web, and it can be delivered in a way that looks like a web reader, as Matt mentioned, or it can be restyled to look like something very different. This modality of delivery involves a dynamic technical dialogue, if you will, between the app and the back end. We're not downloading a static EPUB package that is to be viewed offline, but the content is delivered on demand, and therefore the way that the user, the reader, goes through the content, goes through the application, can be tracked at whatever level of detail is relevant to the publisher. This provides a whole new dimension of insight into customers and how they interact with products. So this dialogue can generate tons and tons of data, too much at times. The model of collecting data and performing analytics upon it, of course, is not new. It's well established within the web and e-commerce world of analyzing behavior and understanding how we can make our offerings better, and that could affect the content or the nature of the application. The data collection is, of course, determined somewhat by the client software. The app that you make or the website that you make determines what level of granularity you collect it at. But the promise here is that we have the ability to collect granular behavioral data, what we sometimes call watching the reader, in that we can really learn how people interact with our offerings. This has really important implications to product strategy and how our products evolve, maybe new forms of delivery. It can provide insight that is critical to, for example, educational offerings, to understand how students and teachers interact with educational resources. And as in the case of the e-commerce environment, it can help us make our applications and our web offerings more usable by analyzing where people may be having difficulty in navigating through the offering and getting to the information that they need. This is really a fascinating part of publishing, and it really is just beginning. This is a new field and quite a fascinating one, and I think looking at some of the pioneering work that Vuk and Scholastic are doing, as well as some of the solutions from companies like Finitiv, is really a fascinating thing to monitor, because true business value can be extracted from these analytics. What I'd like to do is sort of have a discussion among the three of us about some of the challenges of collecting data. I guess one issue is publishers that go through channels such as Amazon delivering Kindle titles don't really have a direct relationship technically with the end user. And can that be a challenge in trying to extract the data that we need? Matthew?
So, I mean, I think it's absolutely a challenge, and it's always one that I don't as people know exists, because I constantly, especially as ebooks, the creation of book-like content, more and more people are doing it, not just traditional publishers, media companies. You know, we work with the Wall Street Journal, other companies of that ilk, and what people, content holders, always ask, well, where do we get the email of the person who does this? And people are shocked when they realize they can't get even that basic information. People who've been running successful digital content businesses have always had that, and it's been crucial. So it's a challenge when you realize how tiny is the eye of the needle. You have to the amount of information that comes through that, and the only thing you can do is quickly figure out how to get around it. And what I highly recommend is, of course, some form of in-book linking. And I don't think you can be clear enough. You just can't be clear enough. You going so far as to even design a front or back page that's a clickable link or that has links embedded in it as an image that will allow – that very clearly calls out readers and gets them to go to a page where you have a simple data capture setup. And this can be anywhere from, you know, one of the most complicated publishing companies doing something really robust to a small independent press with no budget. You can use a software called Unbounce, which is at unbounce.com. You can set up a lead capture form. It's incredibly deep, the fields they let you capture, and you can just link there from inside your book and, you know, do the whole thing for under $1,000. And to me, knowing that that there are the tools out there to make this sort of process available, you just have to know what they are, and you just have to know how price effectively you can do it. If you can do that, you'll start to overcome the hurdle of not having this information.
And a question for Galea. We have now the ability to extract data in real time from platforms like Storia that can help us evolve iteratively product offerings. But is Scholastic, our publishing organizations, able to deal with the quicker cycle times that this kind of analytics-based innovation can support?
I think I have a two-pronged answer to that. The way we are kind of looking at it is the core purpose is to be able to drive insight, define new content in the digital space, and define marketing and content development opportunities with the publishing houses. Now, launching this app, understanding what's really selling in the kids' space is critical. Sharing that with our publisher partners and creating new content will, I think, be able to monetize for us in this space. We are basically embarking on that path, and there may be times initially when we are absorbing information about kid consumption of ebooks, types of titles, genres, the enrichments we're embedding, what is really driving and motivating reading and purchase. Sharing that, identifying areas that we can then develop content collectively and then presenting it. I do think there's a lot of content that exists that can be utilized initially, but as it becomes more specialized, after we have more insights on kid and parent-teacher behavior, it may have a little bit of a lead time of thinking through what's the next key thing that really makes your content exclusive and your ebook, the must-have ebook, that you can actually charge a little bit of a higher price point on. Like I mentioned earlier, some of our tests that we are doing with 15% of our existing offering as enriched, we are able to charge a little bit more. And I think that's where the industry needs to go. That's where partnerships and discussions need to be.
That's a real ROI on analytics, isn't it?
Yes, absolutely.
Who owns the analytics initiatives at Scholastic?
I think As it relates to Storia specifically, the business team, myself, we're very involved in not just looking at, you know, the content element, which is a huge element, but also looking at and triangulation of information. So how are parents and kids and teachers interacting, recommending, and consuming content and browsing and going through the recommendations we are surfacing them on our websites, marrying it up to what they're actually purchasing and what their actual consumption behaviors are through the application, and then taking that and really coming up with what's the next big thing, you know, which content area we have to develop, what other capability do we have to offer, and that really sits with the business team, with the Storia team, basically taking, identifying, mining data. We have so much data that I think one of our key opportunities is to really sit and define what is going to move the needle, get the revenue going, and what are those insights and analytics that we want to identify, define, spend money on to run those analysis and queries and then share with our publisher partners.
Matthew, in a situation like Scholastic, they have a broad platform of data resources and expertise to draw on to gain insight from analytics. But for a smaller publishing organization, how can they understand the significance of data? They might get some data from the delivery of digital offerings, but where do they go to understand, is this good, is this bad? What does it mean in the context of industry norms?
Yeah, I mean, you really need that baseline to actually know how well you're doing. I remember when we started at Vook, we released an enhanced ebook, and it made $30,000. It was a video enhanced ebook, and it made $30,000 in the first month. And we just thought that was a total failure. We thought we had completely blown it, and that there was no, you know, that ebooks were a tiny market. We later realized, and that's because we were coming from outside of publishing, we later realized after talking and getting to know the business much better, that that was a big success. We made decisions around thinking we hadn't done as well that we probably wouldn't have made if we'd known comparatively how well we were doing. So what is the point of that? How do you actually figure out where you're at and what you need to be doing? First of all, you need a test period, and that this is another good example of what you can do. Once we had found out 30,000 was probably much better than we thought, we also realized, well, maybe we kind of learned everything for ourselves. So something we learned was, well, how should we price these ebooks? Instead of going by accepted wisdom, we price tested. So we took a large chunk of content that we had in a certain BSAC. We did it by BSAC categories, and we had, at this point, we had about 600 titles published. So we took 40 or so titles in each section, and we price tested over the course of a month. So we'd start at a certain price, we'd drop it by a dollar, we'd drop it by another dollar, and we'd find using our metrics, using Metrically, we could see at what point the total number of units moved met up with the best possible price point. And that ended up being, we found that, for example, for fitness content, $6.99 was the absolute best price point, while for I think it was cooking content, $2.99 or something was the ultimately ideal price point. So then we figured it all out by genre. So what I'm saying is, if you can't get access to any other information, use your own content smartly and even create content to give yourself something to play with so that you can develop a rich set of data that can inform your future decisions.
If you're trying to, this is for either Galia or Matt, if you're trying to get an analytics project off the ground and it requires some level of investment of either services or implementation or just soft costs of people's time, what's the best way to frame the ROI for management? What's the business case?
I think that what we have done is really identifying what is it that we are trying to do and what information is that analysis going to give us, and then how are we going to use that information to drive and meet our budget and fiscal goals. So it's, you know, it's just simplifying it down to this understanding of how the customer is behaving, how much they're spending, what books they're buying, what's the next thing they will be buying. We'll get us, you know, the downloads, the dollars per order, the frequency of the orders, and that ties into this number that we're trying to hit. And it has really helped prioritize just the long list of things that we actually do want to analyze and also get that, you know, executive approval to move ahead.
Matt, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, I would just say that because of the nature of what you can get with analytics, you can start showing ROI off things like tweeting, marketing, digital marketing. Because in our platform, for example, you can tie a book's Twitter account to its sales, and so then you can track the activity of the account and relate that to sales. And so it's sort of accepted wisdom that Twitter and Facebook and all that stuff is good and you should do it. And our data has shown that, yes, you should. But you can now get to the point where you see exactly how much money that translates into. And when you're showing that to a decision maker, you can say, well, here's the value of X, Y, or Z activity as it reads in hard sales. And I think that kind of insight is what everybody wants. But it's new, and most people aren't even aware you can do that now. But that's the kind of stuff you can start bringing to the table, and it really helps you laser focus your activities so they make sense.
That's really insightful, and I think that the only other thing I can possibly add to that is the fact that analytics is an initiative, is an activity that can start incrementally. It might not necessarily require a big bang investment, and that the most important thing about analytics is that the organization begins thinking about data and behavioral data from customers as a strategic asset, and that mindset is, I think, what's most significant about getting the organization to embrace analytics. And with that, I'll turn it over to Brian to moderate the Q&A piece.
All right. Let me jump in here on the questions. One of the questions we have for you is, it's one thing to collect data. Can you elaborate further on what to do with the data?
Well, I think, again, it's what the value of the data is insight about our customers and how they're interacting with our products and that kind of behavioral insight. Galia, in the context of Storia, tell us the value of that data a little bit more.
I think it really helps define what the next level of content needs to be. It helps you define how to price your content. So to me, given that from a publisher perspective, when you are not seeing and not able to connect to the customers directly, what data is the most important piece of data? I think from that perspective, the most important piece is to understand what content that you've offered is selling, what other content in similar genre, at least getting larger sweeps of understanding, is selling, and what can you do to further your content, your titles? It's important from this data that we are understanding which price bands are more sensitively priced, which how to price the books, what new content to develop, and then push.
So we have another question. This is for Galia. They ask, my 7-year-old son loves reading print books, including Scholastic's Black Lagoon Adventure series. I have a fear that showing him interactive book apps will blunt his enthusiasm and enjoyment of print books. What are your thoughts on this?
It's a very interesting question. I also myself have a 6-year-old and a 9-year-old, and they have been raised on Scholastic books, and they are now very much interacting with the Storia application. They also read other competitive, you know, the Kindle and on the Nook. I think that we are catering to developing confident readers, helping them build their comprehension skills. And whether they are going to be able to do it through the print book and in addition through digital, it's any way the kids can consume content. And we all know that our kids are much more technically savvy than we are, and I think they consume very differently. So it's interesting to have them try it out. We have a huge teacher recommendations on the Storia application, and I think it really helps build that skill that's required for kids as they're growing.
Okay, sorry, we're just catching up on questions here. Someone asks, what companies are providing sales data from Facebook or Twitter? How can someone outsource tracking the benefit of social media?
So a great example is Metrically that we're using, and you know, not to keep. I'm sure they love the publicity here, but they are a good small startup company, but there are others that do this too. But just to use them as an example, so you know what they do is they allow you to plug in the Twitter offers these APIs, Facebook offers these APIs, which is basically just a way for you to plug their application into those applications, and then you can see activity. It will report Twitter will report out the activity on the Twitter account into Metrically, and Metrically will show you how many tweets you did that day. It'll show you retweets that day. It'll give you that information, and then it'll track it for you on a dashboard, and it'll also track, you know, how many books you sold that day, in which marketplaces, and what price point. So that's one of the companies that will do that for you. And you know, they custom built something for us, but you know, I recommend you go and source three of those companies, have them show you exactly what I just said. How the heck do you actually track social media? And they'll show you, and then you can start putting that against activities. And you know, it's really the marketing department should own this. Even if marketing is just one person, it's pretty easy to own because these tools make it straightforward.
Great. We have a question for Andrew, and this is coming from a small nonprofit with limited resources. And the question they ask is, are you saying that you recommend selling books as apps rather than e-books on a Kindle per se? Is that for a better profit?
Not necessarily. First of all, the mode of delivery, whether it's in a standard e-book format with a standard reader platform, or whether it's a publisher app that is dynamically delivering content from a cloud service like Storia or PCS Beacon, that should be determined by the preference of the customer. So we want to be able to deliver things in the way that the customer wants it. Having said that, the point that we'd like to make is that if you have an app that is connected to a back end that is delivering content dynamically and recording analytics data dynamically, then you can gain more insight about customer behavior and identify additional opportunities. That does not necessarily mean that this mode of delivery with an app would preclude a standard ebook. Nor does it necessarily mean that you can sell it at a higher price point. But what we are saying is that increased insight about customers and their interaction with our offerings will identify more successful opportunities. So it's a strategic play in terms of how it guides our product offerings. Do you have anything to add to that, Matt? Apps versus...
No,
e-books?
You know, what I was thinking of is the earlier question about will having an app reading experience take my kids away from print books, and I just thought, well, gosh, I hope it does, which is probably blasphemy, but the fact is there was an eloquent article in New York Review of Books recently that just made the case that what matters is the reading, and what text is that transmission. The sacred thing, to use a sort of perhaps too pompous word, but the sacred thing is the order of the words on the page and conveying that information. And however we do it, as long as the words are going into the mind, that's what matters. And for me, the less intermediation, the better. And in terms of apps or ebooks, it's, you know, apps can be certainly more expensive to produce, but you know, already there's companies like Maz, formerly MagAppZine, Maz, M-A-Z, everybody should check them out. You can make an app so fast with them, and it's ridiculously cheap, as well as companies like Airbook Maker that do will let you do a richly enhanced kids app or a richly enhanced just ebook using a web-based platform. So there are all these options out there, and I think the price prohibitive part is moving out of the frame to mash two answers up together.
I want to add to the question that you were asking earlier about making your content available, whether it's through Amazon or through an app. I think it's important if you have content, making it available to multiple marketplaces is something to get revenue. There's a lot of traffic that a lot of key players have that not the smaller players don't have. Also keep in mind, there are 3-4 million apps that are available. The amount of money to be spent on discoverability of app and then adoption of that app is huge. So from an ROI perspective, you know, those are things to take into account. I know that Angry Birds, one of the best-selling apps, does like 60 million in total, and everybody uses them. So just things to kind of keep in mind as you're thinking about content, multiple partnerships, multiple types of deals, and just selling it through everywhere could give you at least an ROI and some insight into what's happening.
All right. That appears to be we have one more new question. So someone asks, so would it be a good idea to have the same book available as both an ebook and an app?
I can do that. That won't fly because Apple will if the app's not sufficiently differentiated from a book-like experience, often Apple will just reject it. So I wouldn't put that kind of effort into doubling in the marketplaces.
No, that's as an app. That's as an app, Matt, with a capital A, through the App Store, right?
Yep, exactly.
That would not apply to some other modes.
Not apply to. I would do a web-based version and an ebook version, possibly, but not an App Store app and a book.
I'd agree.
Okay. Well, that appears to be all the time we have left for today. I apologize to any questions we didn't get to, but we need to move things along. So I want to thank the panelists, and I want to thank the audience. On behalf of Book Business, thank you for attending this session. If you're interested in discussing anything that you heard during this presentation, we encourage you to visit the networking lounge to chat live with other session attendees. We're heading into an attendee break right now, so it'll be a great time to chat up your fellow virtual conference goers. You can also visit the info booth to fill out our show survey to let us know about your experience today. Please also check out the agenda for the rest of the day. We have several wonderful sessions lined up and encourage you to view as many as you can. And don't forget that we end the day with a keynote from New York Times reporter and the author of The Power of Habit, Charles Duhigg, who will be speaking on The Power of a Crisis, How Leaders Teach Organizational Habits Through Accident and Design. And remember, if you can't make it to a live session, add it to your briefcase and view it at your convenience in the on-demand environment. Have a great show, everyone.